Welcome to the Title League Podcast. I'm Kurt.
And I'm Trish.
And today we're joined by the Executive Director at SIG Sports, Miss Carolina Blanco.
We are huge fans of Carolina. I had the privilege of interviewing her on our panel of women in sports in our last episode, and got to hear a little bit of a taste of what it's like to be in the front office aspect of life in professional basketball. Enough that we asked her to come back on to actually tell her story and see how she got involved in sport and maybe give us a few more of those interesting behind-the-scenes stories.
Yeah, she's been with SIG since 2003. Quite a long time when you think about it, right? I'm just curious to see how much the agency world has changed, especially on the woman's side. It's almost been 20 years that she's been there. And I'm just excited because obviously we're familiar with the men's side. The agency world is runs pretty deep, and it's monopolized by some big players. So I'm interested to see how the women's side is, and more importantly, just, you know, agents on the men's side will pay for families and clients and fly them all over the country and get them to every game. And there's so much glitz and glamour. What is it really like on the women's side?
Yeah, and she's actually not an agent, so it's going to be interesting to hear her perspective of another role that can be held in professional sports. I think one of the things that we try and do here is show our audience that there's a lot of avenues that you can take aside from playing and aside from the obvious. And Carolina definitely has a very interesting, unique role in sports. Yeah, and you know, 20 years, she's really young, and she's been there for 18 years, right? I think is what she said. So there's been a lot of changes, and she kind of teased out a few of them when she was on the panel. Primarily, we were looking at it from a female in a male-dominated industry lens, but overall, I can't imagine just how much the industry has changed since she first started.
Well, she started as, before SIG, was an intern with the Mystics. Like, what was it like being an intern with a WNBA team 20 years ago? I'm sure that's changed. And more importantly, like, she does have a very unique role because she's probably every day juggling and balancing everyone from the agents themselves, the players, all of the inner workings of the agency. So she is the, I feel like she's a gatekeeper at SIG. Yeah,
or the puppet master, depending on the day, probably. One or the other.
But she has a very unique role, and I think the biggest part of her job is probably managing these relationships, and we'll find out. So I'm looking forward to it. We've obviously been very, very privileged to have many of the SIG fam on our show. We love the WNBA, and we're big advocates for it, and we just want to push it forward.
Do you think that we can be so bold as to say that we're adopted into the SIG family? Are we there yet?
I think it's safe to say we're there. I think there's not another agency in the game that has welcomed us with open arms like the way SIG has. I mean, shout outs to CAA in a close second, but I got to give it to our SIG fam.
Well, let's welcome her on the show and give her love in person.
Welcome to the Title League Podcast, Carolina Blanco. Carolina, how's your morning going?
Morning's going great. Started off early, and now here I'm with you, and after I get off, I'm back to work.
And for our listeners, where are you located in the U.S.?
So I'm located in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Actually, that's where the SIG offices are. So literally the office is down the street. I could walk there.
Wow, pretty convenient.
Yeah.
And as far as pandemic, how has that affected, you know, work from home, office? Are you guys back in the office now? What's that like?
You can go to the office if you like or work from home. I mean, right now, the way technology is, I can basically work from anywhere. I just need my computers and phones. So, like, I have two computers that I operate with all the time, and then I have two phones.
And what do you prefer?
I like working from home just because I can keep the schedule I like. I don't tend to do really well. Like, I like to sleep in. I work late. So, like, I'll go to bed at like 11 midnight, but I'm not working at like 10, 11. I'm answering emails. My clients are texting. So I prefer work from home just because I can work my schedule better for myself.
And I mean, you guys at any, you know, especially in the off season of the WNBA, you've got clients all over the world. So the time difference, the time zones.
Yeah. The time difference, like, client was texting me at 5:30 in the morning. I obviously saw it when I woke up, responded right away. Sometimes the clients know that I don't go to bed until late at night. So they'll be texting me like 11:30, like, hey, and we'll just be talking about whatever, but they know that I'm there. So we'll just have a conversation at night. So I don't mind. It's, you know, I've been doing it for such a long time and I like it. So it's okay.
Well, we're really excited to get into a lot today. And for those of that don't know, you're not an agent, but you juggle the relationships. And I'm sure you're speaking with the agents, the clients who are the players. You're kind of the gatekeeper of everything at SIG. So, you know, before we get into all that, I want to just know, how did the opportunity at SIG present itself to you almost 20 years ago?
Yeah, so how that happened was I was working at the University of Pittsburgh as a director of women's basketball operations. That was my first job, paying job out of college. And I was working for a head coach at the time, Tracy Waits. It was the job of a lifetime to be 22 years old. They were just inaugurating the Peterson Center. I was like, my eyes were just so wide open. I'm like, here I am, 22 years old. I'm the director of women's basketball operations at the University of Pittsburgh. Felt like I was the youngest person in the athletic department. It was great. But it was her last year. They fired her at the end of the season. And then they got rid of the entire staff after that. So it was a great learning experience. And then from there, my head coach at Duquesne University, his name is Dan Durkin. He knows I'm from Maryland. I was born and raised in Maryland. So he calls me up and says, hey, I have a friend who's an agent and he lives in Maryland. Why don't you, you know, he needs an assistant. Call him when you get there. I'm like, all right, cool. So I come back home and I call the number. It's Boris is his name. And Boris happens to live and work 5 minutes down the road from where I grew up. So I call Boris and we meet at a Starbucks here in the neighborhood. He said, look, you know, I'm looking for an assistant. Mine is leaving. I need someone to stay with me long-term. It's a small business, but, you know, hopefully we'll grow. And I was like, look, I was born and raised here. I'm not going anywhere. And the opportunity to work in women's basketball was, you know, usually you have to go where the work is. You don't get to pick your location and say, oh, I'm going to work in women's basketball. So I was like, yeah, sure. Sign me up. And that was it.
Wow.
Literally.
You said that, when, you know, back then there wasn't the luxury of choosing where you wanted to live for, especially to work in sports as a woman, but this opportunity came. At the time, what was, you know, Boris needed an assistant. I want to know, like, what did that entail and what did you know of it when you were approaching that role?
I didn't know anything, really, to be honest with you. I mean, I didn't know anything about the professional side of things at that point. I had only been at the collegiate level. And because I was a practice player and a manager in college, and I worked for the NCAAs when they did the regionals and stuff when I was in college, and I was a director of women's basketball operation, I knew the college side pretty well, but I didn't know anything about the pro side. And so, you know, I get to an office and it's just a small office. It's me on one end and him on the other. And I'm like, okay. And it's just, you know, signing contracts and sending players over. It took me a long time to kind of understand what was happening. You know, we're set, it was, what year was this? 2003. So we were still faxing and, you know, burning DVDs and FedExing to teams so they could see the players. So the technology was obviously very archaic to what it is right now. So I was doing kind of that. And then Boris isn't the most organized person on the planet, and I am. So like he didn't have files, or he did, but not complete, or they were, I mean, it was just, so it was kind of like, you know, managing, operating, right? Like getting, learning about the business, getting him, you know, better organized. And then myself just learning, what does it mean to be a professional athlete and to send players overseas and to play in the WNBA? So, and all the things that go in with that, that was what I, you know, was learning through him. And I would listen a lot to him. Because you were so close that I could overhear his conversations if he wasn't speaking Russian. So I would just learn about what, you know, through him, just listening and being there.
Sounds like a very familiar dynamic. And just for those of you who don't know the term burning a DVD or burning a CD,
yeah,
we didn't have jump drives in the early 2000s. You actually had to buy a blank CD and put it into the ROM of your computer and then save files or whatever.
Oh, it was a nightmare. And then did I get the, did he get the, save the FedEx number? I didn't get it. It's going to take 2 weeks. And then the paying for the shipping. I mean, it was just... It was very taxing. And then some, we still, he had VHS still actually in the office. So some of the tapes we had to like convert, and it was a mess.
Listen, I remember going to, you know, it must've been 2007. I went to IMG Academy in Sarasota, Florida.
I've been there. Yeah.
I was, you know, looking for a college to go to, and I was sending, I was doing the same thing in 07, sending all of these Division I, Division II schools, my actual tape. And, yeah. You know, it's not like, I don't think I'm old, but I guess I'm getting old, you know, so.
It's not even about being old. It's just, it just proves how quickly technology has evolved.
Now all you need is IG.
Because you're talking, we're only talking about a 20 year span. That is not a long time. And to go from something that seems so archaic, that was cutting edge, to now, you know, we just do things completely, everything is more efficient and it's done easily. And I guess that's a running theme with your career in general. There's been a lot of changes, and it has changed and evolved really rapidly. So what are some of those changes, and how have you learned?
I mean, for me, it's just like you said, you hit the nail on the head. It's like being efficient, you know, the technology has changed, that it's like, get it up quick, right? Before, things used to take a lot longer. Now, when we sign a client, I can have you on our website with the video. If I get everything done the right, less than 24 hours, like a full game length, two games that people can just watch from all over the world. Before, it used to take a long time. You have to contact a school, see if they reply to the email. Then they'd have to send you the DVD. Then you have to get the DVD, upload the DVD. Maybe you didn't have the bandwidth that it would take, you know, longer than 2 hours. So it's all changed. Now I can have a video uploaded full game, like 10 minutes up on the website. So it's, for me, I'm very big on technology, and I want to learn anything that's new that's out there that can help me do my job faster and quicker, because that's what's changed for us. Like, what the girls and the expectation in the business is, like, when they message you, it's like they wanted it yesterday, you know? So especially when we're dealing with teams overseas, I want to make sure that the teams have everything they need, so we're not scrambling last minute. I hate the stress, right? Like, I can't stand it. So I just want to make sure that I can provide everything in advance, so we're not stressing. I don't want the player to stress. I don't want to stress. And then I don't want the teams to stress, because I think being an athlete is already stressful enough as it is.
Carolina, in the last, you know, it's from 2003 to where we are today, the landscape of women's sports have changed dramatically. When I think of agencies, SIG is the front runner when it comes to women in the basketball world. When I speak to a lot of other agents, especially in the past, I'd say, you know, why don't you guys represent women? And, or if I spoke to not just the agents, but the staff at the agency, well, there's no money in women's sport. We're not going to prioritize our time there. How has that evolved over the last 20 years? And how have you guys pushed that forward as an agency that's leading in that space?
Well, that's Boris, right? Boris is a female basketball agent. That's what the agency was founded on. In fact, we only started doing the men's divisions because his son came along and wanted to work in the business. So they started a men's division, which his son operates. Michael Luchinski is his name. And then we bought out a football agency. So we have a football division, which is headed by Chad Wiesling. So in fact, the agency is founded on women. And that is what Boris knows. He would bring players from, I believe, from Europe, place them here in colleges. And then, you know, when they would graduate, they would sign with him and he would send them overseas. He also did tours. So that is what he knew, right? And there is money in women's basketball. You can't represent like two or three of them and sit back and just collect your $1 million fees. Obviously, we have a lot of clients, but they're all over the world, right? We have a Russian company, you know, Russian division company, SIG Russia. They handle our Russian clients. We have an Australian agent in the office. He handles all our Australian players. And then the American players and European players are handled between Boris and Russia, Boris and Tisha, excuse me. And then myself kind of helping them all. So there is money in women's basketball. It's just, again, you're not going to have two or three and then collect your $1 million fees. It's just not.
I think what I find interesting and just sort of what I've learned over the course of doing this show and interviewing various players and agents and personnel is that mentality that, you know, everybody's making tons of money. So that there's a lot of basketball players, a lot of male NBA players who aren't making a lot of money. And the bottom line is that you need to have an agent who wants to work hard for you. And it's like any industry, the amount of effort and time and dedication that you put into it, the more profitable it's going to be. And there's lots of people who will sign with an agent because they have one or two players that have these multi-million dollar contracts, and they think that that's going to translate into them having the ability to do, like, them as a player to making that much money because of the agent, when that's not always the, like, that's not going to be the case at all, right? So, yeah. I pay attention more, I guess I should say now, to how agents work and what their dynamic is. And the running theme with them and the running theme with most of the people that we've interviewed, whether they're coaches or is that relationship building and that fostering and the importance of really caring for your players and wanting what's in the best interest of your players. And it seems so simple, but it's missed in sports. Right? I think that we overlook it as fans, as people who are watching, the importance of really fostering the relationship and prioritizing the player and the relationship with the player and being honest with that player.
Well, because I think what happens is people want to get into this business because they think they're going to make a lot of money, right? Working in it. And that's actually not really true. Like, you get in the business because you like the sport, or you like being around sports, and you don't really care. You just want to be there. You know, that's my experience. Like, I didn't work in women's basketball or want to be in it because I was expecting some big payday. I just like it, right? Like, I wake up every morning and I like what I do. Some days are better than others, but I get to live the life that I want to live and do what I love. So money is secondary. Yes, we all want to make money, but for me, that's not the purpose. Then you have to remember that these are athletes, but they're people too, right? That's the part. And so our job is to guide them and put them in situations that where they're going to be successful. And so if they're not successful, then I feel bad, right? I want, you know, that's me. I'm not doing my job right. If there's a mistake and that I committed that affects them, man, I feel bad, right? Because it affects them directly. And so it's really not about me. It's about them. And I think that's you have to remember. Now there's so many programs. This also, I don't remember this being when I was in college. You know, I did take one sports marketing class, I think at Duquesne, but there was no like sports management, I think, degrees. And there's all these classes now that, and I always wonder what they teach in them, because I don't really, you know, I don't know that some of these things that you need to be successful in this business, you can necessarily teach in a classroom.
I agree. It's funny, when I went into my education, I was a teacher, and I went into my education degree, the very first day they gathered us together, the class, and they're like, well, the first thing that you need to know is we can't teach you to be a teacher. It's like, oh, okay, great. You're going to take my money and you're going to make me sit through class, but you can't teach me. And it's true. It's one of those things where really the experience of it and learning is the key. So you can have a certificate, you can have a degree, you can have all of that, but nothing is ever going to beat the practical hands-on experience.
The life's experience, yeah.
I want to talk too about you mentioning that you want what's in the best interest of your players and wanting to be honest with your players. I'm a big fan of Coach Nick Nurse, everybody knows this. And in his biography, he talks about an elephant, a little statue of an elephant that he keeps on his desk, and that's to remind him that he can't avoid the elephant in the room, which is having hard conversations with his players and being honest with them about what their ability is and where they can go and what has to happen. And I don't know if that's one of the keys to his success as a coach, but definitely what I find is that honesty piece is really lacking a lot of the time. And in all professions, we tell people what we think they want them to hear and then pay the price for it when it doesn't happen or when they're disappointed. And how have you dealt with situations? Now, maybe you guys have been honest with somebody about what their potential is, but they haven't wanted to hear it or it hasn't been well received. How do you deal with situations like that?
It's tough. I mean, some players, you don't talk about this a lot, but some players get pushed out of the business, right? They're like forced into retirement in a way because their teams don't want to sign them, right? Or they're, whether if it's the WNBA, they might, there it could be an issue of a salary cap or they're too old, or so they're going with a younger roster, whatever the case may be. So then the player could be just slowly pushed into retirement when they're not ready yet. Those conversations are tough, especially depending on where that particular athlete is, just with their own awareness of where they are in their career. Like a lot of players sometimes aren't ready to retire, or they're like, I still got it. Like I can still, but teams don't want you, right? Like, what do you want us to do? We've talked to all of them. And those are the conversations that, you know, Boris and Tisha have mostly with the players, since they're the agents. I'm privy to it because I'm around it. It's tough. It's difficult, but you have to do your job to tell them. Otherwise, how can you garner respect if you're not being, you know, truthful about what's going on? And then it's up to the player to do with that information, you know, what they want. But on our end, we're doing our part, right? To keep them honest and to tell them where they are in their careers or what they need to hear, what they should hear, not necessarily what they want to hear.
Got to be realistic. You said earlier, you know, SIG has the overseas divisions. Overseas mm-hmm. basketball has been around a lot longer than the WNBA has. And yeah. the unfortunate reality of the woman in the basketball space is the majority of them have to work all year round. They don't get to play in the WNBA season and then have an off season. They need to work to obviously accommodate their lifestyle. We know that the money overseas is greater. The WNBA just celebrated 25 years, and it has come leaps and bounds. Obviously, Tisha played in it in the early days and some amazing experiences with the Monarchs, and you could just tell there was that buzz around that franchise. But the CBA has come a long way as well, and it still has a long way to go. But how amazing has it been for you to see everything from benefits to increased wages to, you know, not sharing hotel rooms? Obviously, the next thing is, you know, why are we flying commercial? We need to have chartered flights. What can you speak to as far as just the overall growth and what's next for the WNBA?
I think what we're seeing a lot of focus on right now is the player experience. And this is all kind of, if we think about, you know, technology and how technology has evolved, it's all about our experience, right? The consumer experience, the shopping experience that has evolved to technology. And the same thing is happening in sports. We're focusing more on what's the player experience, right? Like, so the player experience has changed so much from when, you know, Tisha was playing to right now. Like you said, like the charter, you know, the flights, the flying commercial, the hotel stays, the meals, all that kind of stuff, stipends.
I think the biggest one for me was just mat leave. Like mat leave wasn't a thing before. And it's a women's league.
Well, you didn't see a lot of players. Listen, I've talked to a lot of players recently older, and they didn't have kids because they knew, they felt that if they had children, their careers are going to be over, right? Because a lot of it was from overseas, right? And so they didn't want to miss out on that money. I mean, when Tisha was playing, she'll tell you, I don't think she took a break. We didn't represent her.
10 days a year, maybe.
They were basically like machines, and they just went all year round. And I think that there was a lot of fear. I can't speak because what I hear when I talk to the older players is there was just a lot of fear that if they were to get pregnant, that would be the end. And I think really Candace Parker changed all of that because, you know, Candace had Layla and Candace did go overseas, but listen, the teams overseas, you're not getting Candace if Layla's not coming.
Yeah.
Right. So I think she was kind of the first athlete in women's basketball to take Layla overseas and show that you can, you know, be a mother and still be a professional athlete in the WNBA and overseas. And I don't think playing overseas is such a bad thing. I mean, I know that it's hard on them and it's all year long. It can be very taxing on the body, but you're seeing a lot of players now take breaks, right? They're saying, okay, like I have done 3 years consecutive. I need to take, like, you know, the first half of overseas off, and then I'll go in after. think it's a great opportunity to see the world, just play other, have other experiences with other teams. And then the community is so small. So I think it's a great experience for them. And it translates well when they're going into the off the court, when they're retiring and going into coaching or other things, they have all this experience to pull from. But yeah, it's changed a lot. The player experience, I think, is what we're focusing on a lot more right now, which we should, right? Want your players to have a good experience.
There's a saying in teaching that we use all the time, and it's that fair is not always equal. So, and I think that that applies to men's basketball and women's basketball. So, it's a one size fits all sort of situation. So maybe it's unfair with, I'm not going to talk about wages and salaries and all of that, but when you're going overseas, there was an expectation that the women who are playing would be the same as the men and would be entitled to what the men were entitled to or not. Like, so mat leave, for example, wouldn't have been any part of the conversation because it's a one size fits all and guys don't need or ask for maternity leave. Our male players don't do that. And Candace changed it, but it took a lot of bravery to change it, to put an ultimatum like that.
Well, she's the top player in the league, right? You want Candace to come to your country and play in China or Russia or wherever. Layla's coming, and that's it. So figure
and
it
her
out.
Mom's coming because yeah.
her mom is coming, and I get that,
but I'm sure that there's even a part of her that was fearful that there was going to be pushback. So and my point is that you have to be willing to be okay with whatever the consequence is. So you make an ultimatum like that. You hope and you're pretty confident that you're going to get your way, but you also have to be prepared that you might not, and you're going to have to deal with that and whatever that looks like. And that's something that we ask of women far more often than we ask of men. And it takes that one person to then. So when you tell me that there's a generation of WNBA players who didn't have kids because they were afraid they would be penalized, that breaks my heart. Because it's one thing to choose not to have kids. You don't want to have kids. But to have to make to be told or to be put into a situation where you don't have that choice, where you can't have both. I think that a lot of young girls need to hear that because it's those players that have paved the way for them, not just to be professional athletes, but to be able to have these whole life experiences that weren't afforded to people who played 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's what Candace did, you know, by doing that, I think just kind of paved the way for now. You see a lot more players taking their children overseas and teams making accommodations, and it's work, right? You know, some of them are single mothers and the nanny and is the mom coming and the visas and the this, but you know, it's part of the job.
That's right. Keep it moving. You've touched on Candace. You guys represent every, you know, whether it's WNBA MVPs, Olympic gold medalists, you guys have such an amazing roster of clients. Like, it's impressive. But there's a difference between working with a client like Candace Parker or an Angel McCoutry, and then maybe someone who's coming in for the first time and is still trying to establish themselves. How different does the agency handle that? Or is everyone, you know, the cliche of no, everyone is treated the same way? Because we've seen at a lot of agencies, especially on the male side, we've got the big clients and then they use that to sign other clients. And then those clients come in and they're just an afterthought because why am I going to work my butt off for you when I'm not going to make that much money off you?
Yeah, that's not really what we're thinking about on the women's side so much, right? I mean, I think the experience for women coming in, you know, after you're in the draft, right? If you get drafted, you know where you're going. But in terms of overseas, everyone's kind of on the same playing field, and it's very unstable. You don't know where you're going right away, right? And you might not sign right away either. You could sign like 3 months later, 2 weeks later, 6 months later. We can't tell you that. It all depends on the deal that you know, is negotiated. And is it the best deal for you? So in that aspect, I think everyone's kind of on the same playing field, so to speak, right? Sometimes WNBA players don't sign to go overseas till last minute, and they don't know like a week before until, you know, they sign where they're going.
Yeah.
So it's a little different for the women. And then obviously the WNBA, like I said, if you're a free agent, contracts negotiated, you know where you're going already, but the draft. So it's a little different for the women than the men. We don't look at it kind of that way, right? Everyone, we're trying to do our best and work for them no matter where they fall, whether they're the Angel McCautries or they're just, you know, starting from a small school, like they come from Towson University, for example. Like,
yeah,
our job is to get you a job and to, you know, guide you and put you in the same.
I just think it's unbelievable because there is so much instability, because if you're just working with one league, like the NBA, you're working with that league. You guys are working with women who will be playing overseas. So you have to navigate not one country, but multiple countries. And every single country operates differently. And I feel like Boris or Tisha, and obviously your role to facilitate and help this team, it can be tough because, yeah, you may have a strong presence in Russia or Australia, but if they're playing in Turkey or Hungary, how do you navigate within all of these different countries?
That's where Boris and Tisha are very crucial, right? Because Tisha played, so she's been to a lot of these countries, so she can tell you firsthand what it's like to be in these countries, right? Boris obviously has traveled to all these countries and has been in this business for 20 plus years, so he has that experience of working with these clubs all over the world. And Boris has travels regularly to see the players overseas. So you have between three people and my managerial operations experience, you know, have close to like 100 years right there.
Wow.
So, you know, you can talk to Tisha about what it's like to be there. You can talk to Boris about, you know, the management side. And then you can talk to me about the logistics side and just, you know, hearing from the players throughout my years, what's easier transition, what's not. Some players do really well in like the middle of nowhere. They're fine. They're like, I don't care. Send me to, you know, middle of nowhere, Russia. I'll be fine. Other players are like, nope. No, I need a city. I need to be in an environment where I have, you know, things to do. So some players do really well with Israel. It's nice. The weather's nice.
Of course.
They speak the language to transition. So just between three people, you have all this experience. So
I feel logistically over the last year, your role has been a little bit tougher trying to work out flights and all of this within a pandemic. How have you navigated that?
At first, it was really hard because when we were sending players in, well, first of all, passports are a big thing for me, right? Your passport can't expire within a year because if not, you need a new one and blah, blah, blah. So the passport agency wasn't working as it normally would. So before you could make a rush appointment, go in, apply in person, then that got knocked out. It was like taking 2 to 3 months to get a new passport, which was really taxing for me. And then it's the COVID test. Right now, COVID testing is easily accessible, but when they were flying in October, November, it wasn't that accessible. It was really difficult. And then they needed within 48 hours. So I was like Googling nonstop, trying to find like what is open, calling, how much does it cost? Can you get it in time? Can you guarantee the results? Sending the player, you got to go. So it was a little chaotic. So there were a couple factors that made it more chaotic for me, but we always figure out a way. My goal for myself is, can we get through 1 year of like no issues, like nothing? There's always something. I try to minimize the issues because things pop up that I'm not aware of, but that's my like kind of goal for myself every year. Like, can we go without a year without having any travel problems?
Are you a control freak?
Well, I wouldn't say control freak. I'm big on organization.
Sounds like you, Trish.
That's fair. Shut up.
But the thing is that like after doing this for so long, here's my thing. I've been doing this we're going on 18 years. If I'm not prepared at 18 years, like to know what's coming down the pipeline, then I'm not good at my job. Right. So I shouldn't be having the same mistakes over and over again. If I've been doing this so long, I should be prepared. And that, so yes, you might call me a control freak. I call it organization. But like that's me. And I don't want to stress, right? I don't want to have to stress because the team stress, they stress text me. Then I stress text the player, you know, and it just keeps like this whole circle. I don't like it, right? I want to sleep good.
Full disclosure, they're all, my team over here is very much pointing at me as you're talking. So if you're a control freak, I'm a control freak too.
Someone has to be, right? Someone has to keep things organized.
Just in terms of your like European organizations, we see how the WNBA has evolved here. Sometimes you're in countries that are still a little backwards when it comes to everything. Whether it
paying on time,
right? Whether it is logistics, like technology, logistics of payments and all of that, but also just in mentality and in attitudes. What progress have you seen throughout the European leagues? And have there been some countries that have just sort of stayed stuck in 1983?
I would probably have to go to the players to find out their experience on playing. But for me, I've seen just the way that they operate and they treat the players a lot differently. And I think that's also as a result of technology, right? Before, when Tisha was playing and I started, we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have Instagram, we didn't have this cell phone to just take pictures and be like, look at this apartment that's dirty and hasn't been clean that you just dropped me off at. You know, now players go overseas, they have this device which can hold teams accountable and be like, I just landed and this is my apartment. And I'm like, you know, so, and that's actually to their benefit, to the player's benefit, right? Because you're not going to want to go play in a team where they're not taking care of you. So I think the player experience, when I go back to that, has changed overseas. And I think a lot of it is due to the technology and the expectations. Players, the expectation now is that, no, I'm not going to arrive to wherever country and not have a clean apartment and not have everything that my contract says it should have, right? I signed this contract. This is what it says. I expect it to be this way by the time I arrive.
Exactly. Support for today's show comes from Locker Room, the best place to talk sports. When I'm watching a game, whether it's my favorite team, casually watching, or my favorite player, I want to jump into the game and join the conversation. For me, it's Twitter, but oftentimes I'm drowned out in the conversation. With Locker Room, I can be in the same room with passionate sports fans from around the world, talking about the game that we love. Locker Room is the first live audio platform built just for sports fans. On Locker Room, you can create and join live conversations with your favorite fans, athletes, and insiders. Whether you're reacting to breaking news, starting a watch party for a big game, or debating who should win MVP, Locker Room is the best place for live conversations about sports. Download Locker Room for free today on the Apple App Store. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
You said earlier in the interview, we're WNBA draft is just around the corner here. It is so different in the women's side because Stanford just won a few days ago. And now we have the draft. Like, there is no rest. Like, you go straight from playing in March Madness, if you're playing in the tournament, directly to the draft. That is just I'm trying to think from a logistical standpoint. I feel like
it's a grind.
It is. It's a grind. Like these ladies are literally at it all year round. So what does WNBA draft preparation look like for the agency?
Well, it's virtual this year. So normally we would go, Tisha would be going to the draft, our team would be going. So we're just, you know, we're signing clients right now. We're recruiting. We're getting our roster ready. And then draft day, of course, everyone's watching. And then we're talking to the clients and getting them ready, right? Their outfits or getting them, making sure they're situated with whatever they need on draft day and then seeing where they're going. And then when they get drafted and then I get ready for training camp, right? It's really quick. The turnaround's kind of fast. So it's a hectic time for them, but that's just the life of a female basketball player. Same with when they're done playing WNBA and they have to go overseas. Some of them get like 7 days. You know, some get 2 weeks, some don't. Some like are expected to turn around and leave within 5 days of after they, you know, complete their game and go overseas. So it's just, unfortunately, that's just the nature of the business for the women. Yeah.
You talk about the outfit and I'm sorry, I gotta go down this road. So we had Meg Walker on the show and we talked about what she had wore on draft day, which was this gorgeous gold mustard yellow suit. And so we talk a lot on the show about guys' outfits, and that was probably the first time that we spoke to a female player about what she wore. I can't remember any others. Do you know how many people came up to me like after the fact or DM'd me or texted me and were like, oh, we looked up Meg Walker, we saw what she wore. Fuck, that was so beautiful. That was so awesome. Like, it was, she, I got a shout out to Meg because I don't think she was 100% sure about her mustard yellow suit, but
She rocked
it. The fans agree that she rocked it. So what they're going to wear is so important.
What they're going to wear. And that's also evolved, right? We weren't talking about how players were arriving to, you know, to their games. And I think there's an account now that shows what they're wearing and showcase their shoes, right?
Lakers.
And so now the experience, again, has changed and evolved over the years, which I think is great. They do it for the men, right? Why not do it for the women?
That's right.
I love it. Shout out League Fits and you know, just putting the spotlight on everything on and off the court. And the collision of fashion and sports have also come so far. Just moving forward on the entire, you said there's a lot of players that get forced out of retirement.
They get pushed along.
I think it's time that we look at expansion in this league. Like the WNBA is so skilled and talented, but that's because there's just not that many jobs available. I mean, the NBA has 450. The WNBA doesn't have nearly 450 because you've got 12 teams. We're in Canada. There is a bid, I know, in Toronto that has been put out there. But what do you think? How far are we from additional teams or expansion?
You're going to see expansion. It's just a matter of when. I think you're going to see it, right? I mean, I think it's inevitable.
Which market do you think is most deserving?
I don't know about deserving, right? Wherever the WNBA team would be welcome is fine for me, right? Like whether it's Miami, I don't care. As long as there's,
I love how you say Miami. Base. You're just going to be in Miami.
We want you to push Toronto.
I think Canada, wherever the WNBA is wanted and there's going to be support and there's going to be an investment, it's fine. It's fine with me, right? Like, I don't care if it's Wisconsin. If the Wisconsin is going to get behind them and love them and embrace them and invest, sure, why not? Right? Like, it doesn't matter.
Well,
as long as...
We're hopeful. And I think it is just, especially, I think in the last year, we've seen this massive stride. There has been so much press. The wobble was available. People were able to see it on national television. Games were shown here in Canada. The support for the women's game has never been greater, in my opinion. Trish, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about in terms of technology and access. So when I think about when the WNBA started, I, in Canada, couldn't watch games. There was a lot of hype that I would read or hear about through American media, but the ability to watch a game didn't exist. And then you fast forward a few years and I could have paid premium dollars to get a TV channel that, you know, my high school university account didn't budget for. So that didn't happen. And now we're at a point where even though Canadian broadcasters are airing games, like they did do that this past season, it's much easier for me to stream and to have access. And so the accessibility outside of the United States is key to having... a profitable league, to having a really highly competitive and interesting league. I mean, again, when you're trying, when not that we want to keep on comparing the NBA to the WNBA, but we NBA players are in our face. They're everywhere. They're accessible. Yeah. And here we are within basically the same market as you, just, you know, a few hours north of where you are, and the access to WNBA games and those personalities didn't exist. Now with social media, now with technology, I mean, Paige Bueckers, we talked about this, has more followers than any NBA or WNBA player.
She did a talent show last night live. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, I saw it.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, she did a live, and I just hopped on really quick. I was like, what is she doing? I just hopped on quickly. There were 9,000 people already on
Crazy.
It watching.
She'll have a million by the time
she's a junior.
Freshman.
She's a freshman. So it's like this girl is still 4 years removed from anything. Well, not necessarily. Anyway, if she finishes her, yes, because she has to
three years.
Three years removed, and she has the world watching her, and she is talented. So let's put that in a corner. But there are lots of women who are talented but haven't had the access and the opportunity to showcase that talent in the way that she has. And so she's now setting a stage for those that are with her, that are older than her, but more importantly, that are coming up, that is going to make the popularity of the women's game just soar.
Well, Paige grew up with this technology, right? It's always already invented well on its way. So like her following is a result of the fact that this technology already existed for this generation that's coming up. So she's been building her followers and everything. And there's a lot more eyes on her. And like you said, it's visibility. And also talking about the WNBA, just when the WNBA isn't in season, right? Like there's so many stories and so many things that these women are involved in that probably don't get reported or talked about because we're not in season. So it's telling these stories, you know, all year round, not just when the WNBA is in season. And I think to your point, accessibility is huge. Now you can see them even play overseas. Yeah. You know, FIBA streams the game, so you can go on YouTube and see them live.
What do you
go ahead.
I was just going to interject. She's in college. We all know that. Freshman still has 2 years before she'll be eligible for the draft. With the following that she has growing every single day, she's over 700,000 followers on Instagram, soon to be a million. Just think, like, how much she could be monetizing her likeness right now and how much money she's losing out to because of the rules and regulations around the NCAA.
I think that's going to change too. It's on its way to changing, but it's also like these guys are basketball players, right? So yes, they could probably monetize off their following, but I have to tell you, like being an influencer and monetizing off your following is not an easy thing to do, right? It's not like the endorsement deal is just going to fly your way because you have, you know, an X amount of followers. There is going to be a certain amount of work that has to go behind it. So there's that piece too, that the players understand that, yes, you have a huge following and that's fantastic. We all applaud that. You definitely could be monetizing off it, but there is going to be some work that you're going to have to put into it on your end as well. And part of your following is as a result of the fact that you are such a great basketball player. So you still have to work on your craft and evolve and continue to grow what you're good at. Otherwise your following may just kind of, you know, not grow. Like as you grow, your following is going to grow. It's kind of like one, you know, cycle. You're seeing a lot of players now that they want to do more than play basketball, which is great, but you have to remember what got you to where you are is basketball, and you can't forget your craft. You have to work on that, right? It's kind of balancing the fact that you're an athlete with these other endeavors that you
want to. Don't cheat the game.
I just want to make a snarky comment, but Kim Kardashian just made $1 billion. She's definitely used the without much talent or
Kim Kardashian's a business,
hate on
right?
Kim Kardashian is an influencer who has made a business out of being an influencer.
I can't believe Kim K's name made an appearance on the show.
So just to play devil's advocate, you have a Paige Beckers who actually has a defined talent outside of influencing.
Yes. So, I'm not saying she can't. I'm just saying there's work that goes, right? You're going to have to post, you know,
on the Kardashians. Don't
right.
Judge me.
There's work that goes into it. It doesn't just like, there is some work that has to, that the player will have to put into monetizing off their following, right? You have to post regularly. Your post, you know, the design of your post, what you're posting, you know, making the videos. And look, I mean, you guys produce a podcast, right? Takes work, takes time. So that's what I'm talking about. It's like, it
distracts from what your craft is.
Yeah, like you still have to work on that. You right. know, there is some work that goes. That's what I'm kind of talking about. Like that the players understand that, yes, it's great. You can monetize and you will be able to, but there is some work that goes into building your brand. Mm-hmm. And you have to be consistent at it, right? You can't just do it once and like, okay, well, I did this. And no, like it has to be an everyday thing.
Agreed. You said earlier that you don't get into women's sports because you're going to get rich overnight. You get into it because you love the game and you have a genuine interest in working with people. And at the end mm-hmm. of the day, these are people you're working with. It's people get so caught up with, oh, they're professional athletes or celebrities, but they are just human beings like us. So there's not that much glitz and glamour. I mean, you're not flying clients private across the country, $100,000 bottle service parties at Vegas. What is that day-to-day, the hard work that doesn't get seen that you know, people don't necessarily see. And for the young people who are listening, who are looking to get into this industry, whether you're a young young man or young woman, what advice do you give them?
I think if you want to be, a lot of people are email the office now regularly to, you know, get into this business. I was already in this as a kid.
Now it's hot. Everyone wants to jump on, right?
Yeah. Like, and I think late, right? Like as a kid, I was in it and I worked, you know, college camps. I was around it 24/7. I was a practice player and a manager. So for me, if I were to give advice, it's like, if you're passionate about a particular sport, then you need to be around that sport as much as you can. And I wouldn't look to get paid or not. Like to me, it's a bonus. Like, I didn't care. You know, I just wanted to be there and be around the game and the people and the athletes. So if you're motivated by money, I think it's the wrong motivator. Money doesn't motivate me as a person. It's not my motivation anyway. But I think you just, if you're passionate about it, you need to be around it. And that's going to show in your work. Right? It's not glamorous, right? We get called, we don't have a day off, right? We work 7 days a week, all year round. I mean, Christmas Day, like if a relative dies, yes, you do get a period, but you're still working, even though that relative died and you still have to, you know, figure out things. I mean, it never stops. And some people, I mean, you know, my friends will comment, they're not in the sports, like, oh, you know, it's such a, all you do is babysit. I'm like, you can look at it that way, but that's not really what I'm taking care of the clients, because my job is to do that so that they can focus on their job, right? My job is to focus on things to make their life easier. And that's not always glamorous. Planning travel and doing visas is not glamorous. Or, you know, one of the players 1 year needed help babysitting and she was in town. And so I went and stayed in the hotel with her child. That's not glamorous at all. Like, hey. Or plan a tour because they're in town and they want to take a tour. Like, it's a lot of managerial things that aren't always fun.
Nobody wants to get their hands dirty.
Yeah, people just want the big title, but they don't want to do the work.
What's cool is that you get to work with these cool people. That's what I see it like. I think it's cool, right? Like, I get to work with Angel McCautry and I get to, you know, work with Candice and I get to work with, we worked with Cappy Ponexter and Olympians and Yelena Luchenko, who's overseas. I mean, Svetlana. How cool. It's to me, I just think it's cool. Right. To me, just to be able to call them and be like, yeah. And I know them, I work with them. But is it glamorous? Absolutely not. Yeah. No, it's fun.
I've talked about this a couple of times, at least on the show. When Kurt started the company, they hosted viewing parties for when the Raptors were in the finals in 2019. And so there was these big outdoor watch parties with thousands of people in Halifax. And at the end of the night, you know, it's the middle of the night and he's sweeping up like the streets so that it would be clean. And again, that's not a glamorous job, but when I tell that story, when I think about it, it's pretty friggin' cool. Like it's a great story. It is a great, and so again, if you are passionate, it's exactly what you're saying. If you're passionate about what you're doing, these things that might seem like menial tasks or things that are quote unquote beneath you are not at all. They're amazing opportunities and they're great stories to tell.
I think I want to touch on the definition of a team, right? So I learned in college when I had the opportunity to become a practice player and manager that a team is not just the players on the floor that are playing. A team is everything that happens to make that team able to play, right? It's the trainers, it's the managers that wash your uniforms, the physical therapists, the coaches, all those components make up a team. So, you know, these players that we represent that are playing, you know, they have a team behind them that allow them to be successful at their job. I'm a piece of that for them. And that's how I look at it. I'm part of, you know, a team that helps them be good at their job. And yes, sometimes it could be seen as a menial task. I went through a period where I was just like, man, am I really just sitting here doing visas every year and sending players overseas? And I had to shift, you know, the mindset for myself, right? And say, no, Carolina, you're really helping them, you're guiding them. And when I shifted my mindset and I'm helping build a business, that changed for me, right? And I had to remember, like, you are part of a team.
Exactly. You take that out and, you know, people on TV see the five players that are on the hardwood, but there's so much that goes into that on and off the court, and the teams are so integral. So shout out to every single person that is behind the scenes that doesn't get the love, because without you, there's no them. So I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah, the shot clock people,
everything, like the interns, you name it. So yeah. I just wanted to shout out the shirt you're wearing. Is that Bria Hartley's shirt?
It's Bria Hartley's all heart. It's what I was
yes,
wearing today.
I love it. And you know, we got to enjoy a little behind the scenes yesterday on the WNBA Instagram takeover that she was running.
Yeah, she was on it with her son, Bryce. She's great. I love her.
Love Bria.
She's just out there. She takes her son to training sessions, to rehab. But that's real life, right? Like, that is normalizing being a single parent and taking care of your kid. And I don't if you saw the Arizona game, right? Big, because Adia Barnes was breastfeeding during halftime or pumping. And so that made it on. But like, and Adia used to be a client of ours. She's a boss. I love her. Nice. But I think it's great. And Bria's fantastic. And she's making it work, right?
Big time. And just on Bria, I mean, that I'll say I'm jumping on the Phoenix Mercury bandwagon. Okay. You heard it here first. They're stacked. Okay. I'm sitting next to Scott right now, and Scott's a producer here at the show, and he's a big Mercury fan. He's been a Diana Taurasi fan for as long as I can remember, the true GOAT. But Kia Nurse is on that team too. And I was just thinking the other day, like, she had to leave Canada to get to camp, right, for the Mercury. And she's just flying on a regular flight. Like, she's not flying charter. She's on the plane. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, it's Kia Nurse. Like, sometimes you just want a break. These women don't get that break. And we talked about it earlier. They're working all the time. But they're on the flight, and they're probably sitting, whether it's in a, you know, maybe they're sitting business because they've upgraded, or they're sitting in the regular cabin. But they've just got people around them all the time that are probably just asking them questions, and they just want to chill, catch a flight by themselves.
Maybe, but I also think it's a good opportunity to network. I do. That's how I think, right?
Yo, I'm Carolina, like, you see the best in everything. I love
it. I'm like, ladies, like, you're out there. People are stopping you because you're 6'3", whatever. They recognize that you're an athlete. Like, use that as an opportunity to meet someone new and network, because you never know who you're going to meet, who you're going to be talking to.
Facts.
So I look at those opportunities. Yes, it stinks, right? They probably want to fly private. Who doesn't want to fly private? It's amazing. But like, network, use it to your advantage, meet new people. Like, so turn it into a positive, I guess.
Okay, I love it. just to keep
have your business card ready, hand them out.
Just to keep it rolling.
You want those like opportunities, you're going to have to look for it.
That's
so hand
right.
out your business cards, you know. I'm available for influencer opportunities, whatever it is you're into. Please, you know, email me.
Yes. Just quickly, I got to ask you, do you still suit it up? Do you still play? I mean,
no, I stopped playing years ago. I used
come
to play.
Come on, you don't pick it up at the park, the Y?
No, every now and then I might go to, I might go to the gym. We have two full courts and I'll play, but I get so frustrated playing with the guys, because I'm like, I can't, right? You got like 6'6" guys that want to dribble the ball up. And I'm like, listen, you can't dribble the ball up. Have me do that. I'm 5'5" and a half. I need you to post, please.
Oh my God. are you that person on the court who's just shit talking the whole time?
No, it's not shit talking. It's just common sense, right? If I'm on your team, and usually you're playing with men, and I'm 5'5" and a half, right? I am not going down low or going into that mess of all these, you know, men that are taller than me, going to block me. I need to be on the outside passing and making. So get your butt down there, because you're really tall, and post. I can't. I get really frustrated. Every now and then I'll go by myself.
I want to see a SIG celebrity game, like the SIG team versus the players.
Oh, that would definitely be interesting.
Listen, you got Tisha. She can lace them up.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. No, I play every now and then. I played throughout my whole life. I got into it because my brothers, I have two brothers. I have a half brother and a brother. They wouldn't let me play with them. So I went to the court and I was like, okay, fine, I'll learn. And then I started learning and I got good. And then I started getting better and they stopped playing and I never did.
Amazing. Well, I have a couple questions before we get on to the Q&A, and Trish has a few questions for you, but I'm going to phrase my first question. If you were to build your own 3-on-3 team and you could put 5 players on it and they all had to be SIG clients, who's your starting 5? And I'm
Well, we only have like 8 employees.
So no. I'm talking about your clients.
Oh, my clients.
So if you're taking, if you're putting together the best 3-on-3 team to go and you're putting your money on them to win, who are you putting on your team?
Current roster?
Current roster.
Oof. Jonquel Jones.
Okay.
Man. Jasmine Thomas. 3, right?
Yeah, 3.
Candace Parker.
Oof. There we go. That's the squad right there. Trish,
we have so many.
Okay. Well, I ask the same questions to end each episode. They're not basketball related at all.
Sure.
Give me the first answer that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you were to write your autobiography today, what would you call it?
Underestimated.
And who would you get to play you in the movie?
Sandra Bullock.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I see, yes, Sandra Bullock 100%,
vibes. 100%. And which TV show, past or present, can you relate to the most?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Ballers.
Nice. Yes. Nice. I love it.
That's it. Those are my 3. Carolina, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a
blast.
Thanks
for having me.
And again, thank you so much for the support that you guys give to us and our little startup up here in Canada.
No, thanks for giving a platform for ladies to come on, and we really appreciate that.
Well, there's more to come. We can't wait to see this new freshman class that gets signed.
We're excited. For sure. We're excited. We love it. We love everyone at SIG, represent SIG fam. Happy to have you on today, Carolina.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to the Title League podcast. Join Trish and I every week as we take you into the lives of the players and personnel from the WNBA and the NBA. Tune in wherever you find your podcasts.